to order at 6:07. If we can stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
Mr. Arfala, can you call roll call, please?
Okay, Trish Bruder's here. Trish, do you want to do it? She's going to be doing the minutes. Otherwise, I could. All right, I'll do it. Ralph Capiello?
Okay. Here.
Robert Heider?
Here.
Camille Kurtica?
Yes.
Chris LaRoque?
Here.
Aniello Malerba III?
Present.
Carl McCluster? Gina McKay?
Here.
Sam Palastro? James Smay? Charles Stankey?
Yep.
Okay, you have a quorum present, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll go to number four, public portion. If there's anyone from the public that wishes to speak. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak? Third time, is there anyone from the public that wishes to speak? Okay, hearing none, can I have a motion to close the public portion?
Chuck Stankey, so moved.
I have a motion by Mr. Stankey.
I'll second it.
Second by Ms. Kurtica. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, motion carries. Okay, earlier in the week, this weekend, we received the minutes from the June 4th introductory meeting. Has everyone had an opportunity to read the June 4th and the June 10th minutes? Okay, is there, Mark is going to share them. Is there any discrepancies that anyone wanted to bring up?
I just wanted to make a clarification, Rob.
Hey, Rob, the only thing is, well, it had that I wasn't present, but I was at the end of it. You see that I spoke. I think it was just an issue with the volume, but I was present at that meeting.
Okay, I think Mark said he'll have that corrected.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Yeah, we'll just note it for the record. For this record of this meeting, which meeting, Camille, was that for this, the 10th?
The 10th, right.
The June 10th meeting, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So then the records, the minutes of this meeting will reflect that everybody agreed that Mrs. Kurtica was present at the June 10th meeting from the beginning.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chuck, thanks. Sorry. Go ahead.
Not a problem. Not a problem. Just a clarification in the notes that Mark had handed out. It said that I propose a provision for minority representation on the Board of Aldermen. That was not as a change. That was only if they combined the Board of Aldermen with the taxation that we needed. Yep,
and that document is just a working document, Chuck. So
thanks, Mark. I just wanted to make it clear that I'm not proposing a new regulation that the tax board, that the Board of Aldermen have.
You mean the document that the summary document?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's not.
Was just that we had to be aware that if they combined both, that we needed some minority representation.
Sure. Yep.
Okay. So if I could have a motion to approve the minutes for June 4th and June 10th.
Chuck Stankey, so moved.
Oni Malerba, second.
Okay. So we have a motion by Mr. Stankey and a second by Mr. Malerba. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Okay, so now we're going to move on to number six. We are going to prioritize the proposed revisions of the city charter. We received this afternoon the summary of the items that we received both from the Board of Aldermen as well as from the public's public hearing at our last meeting on the 10th, as well as any items that the commission brought up. So all those items are summarized here. So we can go through those individually. And tonight I'd like to get a feel for how we'd like to proceed. I know we're kind of you know, I've said this in the past, we're constrained with time, so we're going to have to get this to the Board of Aldermen, likely for their August meeting. So we're going to be able to meet, other than tonight, like probably twice in July, and again in the first meeting in August, unless we decide that we need to have a special meeting and meet more. So if we can prioritize these items tonight, we'll go through them individually and see what our appetite is as far as do we want to move forward? Is it something that we might want to put off because of the complexity of the item and be able to do further research simply because of our time constraint? So if everybody has their, Mark has the Charter Revision Commission summary up on the page, so we can just go from here. So section four, proposed by Alderman Sampson, the mayor should be a full-time position. Is anyone opposed to looking at this deeper? Okay, so hearing no opposition, this is going to be an item that we will look to further discuss. The next bullet point is the mayor's salary should be commensurate with that of a full-time position. Is there any opposition to this item? Okay, good. So we're gonna move forward with discussion on that. The third bullet point is the mayor should be provided with a city vehicle. Any opposition to this idea?
I think we had some opposition last time, didn't we,
Rob? We did, yes. The Board of Aldermen at our last meeting or so, we moved a vehicle from the police department to Public Works, and that was mentioned that we were going to put the city seal on the side of it. So if the mayor needs to go to a meeting in Hartford or any other official business, rather than taking his own vehicle, that he can take that. So I'm not sure that we would need to spend further taxpayer dollars on a city vehicle, especially at this point in light of what we've seen from the taxes lately.
Agreed.
Can they? Yeah, agreed. And can they not expense it? Can they expense the travel?
Well, they have. That's a good question. I know they are. They have a gas allowance from the city. So, Mr. Marino, do you know if they're able to expense mileage?
If they get nothing, they should be able to get mileage reimbursement. Mr. Chairman, this is one of the issues I was going to point out, is saying I don't think it's appropriate to make it a charter requirement that the mayor get a vehicle, like, or anyone get a vehicle. I think ultimately that may change from time to time, depending upon the city's circumstances, and it should be left up to the legislative body as part of a compensation package.
Okay.
I'm glad you said that, because I wanted to bring that up and I was kind of afraid, because this is my first time on one of these committees.
Don't be afraid to bring anything up. We're all socially distanced.
Okay, so we won't move forward on that one. We're going to bypass that one.
Rob, if I could just comment before we go any further. This is Chuck. Just a reminder that when we had our first meeting, that it's important to, as we were just starting and we're under a timeline, it was suggested and that we look at it very carefully, that we pick some stuff that we know will get the least amount of pushback, so we can at least get it started, that the voters can vote on it. And as you had previously stated, you know, we have a 16-month appointment and that we could be reappointed. So when we go through these things, just, you know, if we can keep that in the back of our minds, that, you know, we should look, because of the time constraint, we should just really look at stuff that will get the path of least resistance, really, and that we think that we'll have a good chance of moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. You know, there obviously should be some items on here that we discuss that are low-hanging fruit that we can probably get agreement from the general public and the voters. However, I also feel that we should probably get something to the effect of the mayor being full-time or the mayor becoming off or elected officials becoming a four-year position. I'd like to get, hopefully get that on the ballot for this November, because if we get, if that's something that we push off and we move it to 2021, that's the actual citywide election. So we're not going to be able to, so if we, for instance, if we adopt the question for the on the ballot would be, should the mayor be four-year term while the mayor is running? So that's not something that I think we need to get that done prior to the next municipal election.
Agreed, Robert.
Okay.
And sorry, Rob, this is Gina. Why, can you just clarify why there's no action on the vehicle and why we're just not, is it out of scope? We're not making a decision on that? Because I heard last meeting and then this meeting, I think that we were opposed to that and that there's another, perhaps another, you know, solution in terms of whether it's a T&E or they get some sort of, you know, compensation built into their, into their compensation package. But I think, I just don't understand the why no action on the vehicle.
Well, I think we decided that that's something that we didn't want to, currently the charter doesn't allow for a vehicle, doesn't state that the mayor gets a vehicle. So rather than, move forward with seeing if the public wants to give him a vehicle, I thought that there was enough opposition. But if it's something you want to review, continue to talk about, then we could certainly do that. And again, he does have a gas allowance. And there's another
vehicle. Sorry, Robert.
That's okay, guys. There's also another vehicle at his disposal now from the department.
And I believe Mr. Marino also advised against putting something like this in the charter of the Corporation Council. So I'm indifferent, but if we're getting the legal people are telling us it may not be the best idea for charter revision. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I'm game for whatever.
Yeah, I would just say for the group, for the committee, the charter is really the organic law, body of law for your community. You don't have to get so specific in every detail because many things are dealt with by ordinances that are allowed by statutes. And in one of the, as I was going through it, I was striking things out that seem to be inconsistent with what the city is doing or what the statutes provided. So instead of getting into the minutiae of, the mayor has to wear green shirts every Thursday, which is kind of like the mayor can have a car. If the Board of Aldermen or the boat want to fund that at some point in the future, they can. Even if your charter doesn't say yes. I think you want to look at your charter as being in a broader spectrum of what does our community need for purposes of its governmental operations on a larger scale? Your legislative body, your board of finance, things of that nature. How many constables do you want to have? If you want to have any justices of the peace, things like that, you can kind of go through. But, some of the provisions, and we can go over them later on, I question why they're in the chart.
Yeah, and thank you for that, Vincent. I think it was just more the wording. So I think what I hear you saying is that it's out of scope for the charter revision, and it's not exactly that there's no action, but it's out of scope.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it.
Okay, thank you.
And I think the note on there, meaning no action, is meaning that we're not gonna review it going forward.
Okay, thank you.
I think I brought this up at the last meeting. I think that we have to consider how the public is going to look at all of this, because we are hitting them with a tax. Everybody's getting hit with the tax increase. Right. And we're going to try to make the mayor a full-time position. That's more money. We want to give the mayor a vehicle. That's more money.
Right.
We're only going to be able to hit people so hard in one time. And I think they're going to be very sensitive just over the tax increase without any other increase. So we got to tread lightly with what we're going to do.
I agree, Ralph.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next bullet point is the elected mayor should serve a first term of 4 years, followed by 2 year terms thereafter. That we already discussed last week that cannot happen by state statute. So that it's either 4 years or 2 years for every term. So if we want to reword that, I think that might be something we want to look to do. And not necessarily just the mayor, but all elected officials move to 4-year terms rather than two. And that'll certainly.
And that is in another section there too, if you want to take that up.
It is, okay.
Others have recommended that, so you could take that up another spot there if you want.
Yeah, last week.
Do you remember where it was, Mark? Because I was looking through it earlier.
Ron Sillhead. Oh. Ron Sillhead brought it up, and I think.
It's under Ron Sill.
There it is, yeah. It's on bottom of page 2, section 55. So members of the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen should serve 4-year terms.
Walt Mayhew presented it too.
Okay, perfect. All right, so it's on there multiple times. So is this something that, is there any opposition to move forward and discuss this further? Okay, so hearing no opposition, this is an item that we will move forward with as far as further discussion for elected officials, not just the mayor. All right, the next item is the treasurer's position should be an appointed position instead of an elected one. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm very opposed to that, taking it away from the people.
I agree with you, Oney. I'm in the same boat.
Chuck, I agree too, Owen.
Yeah, I agree as well.
I agree as well also.
So do I.
Okay, good. So it sounds like there's enough opposition. So that's an item that we're going to move away from. We're not going to take any action. We're not going to move forward with that one, with that item. Okay, the next bullet point, minimum requirements for the position of treasurer and finance director, whether elected or appointed, established job descriptions and skill sets required for each position. That was also brought up later on page 3,
section 14. Established minimum requirements, right?
Yeah.
And just for clarification, there are minimum requirements for the finance director that are already in the charter.
Right.
So maybe we should review.
I don't know how we're going to allow minimum requirements on elected positions. I think that's, you know, I just think you're getting into kind of murky waters with that. I mean, I know it says treasurer. I know it's, you know, so we'll use Walt as an example, but, you know, it's also kind of implying that Walt can't do his job as well. Not that we mean that, but sometimes I think we're going down a very rocky slope, like if it's especially specifically on elected positions. If it's something that's appointed, like a paying job, then that's, I mean, well, I know treasurer's obviously a paying job, but I just think we're getting into a little bit dirty water here, for lack of a better term.
Mr. Chairman,
yes. You're breaking up there. I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
You're breaking
not up. Not that well.
I think if people mute themselves, it comes across a little better, Rob. I found out with these meetings.
Well, but also too, if you're going through Wi-Fi with your laptop, a lot of times with the video, it doesn't. If your bandwidth is not that strong, you're using the video, you're better off. I mean, using the audio, you're better off to use your telephone for the audio.
Can you hear me now?
In order to do that, if you hover. You can do that on the bottom left of your phone, on the bottom left of the screen.
Okay.
We got you now, attorney.
Okay. I don't believe you can qualify it if it's an elected position beyond a resident elector. Because any resident elector would be eligible to run for that position, whether or not they meet your qualifications. If it's a hired position or appointed position, then of course it can have qualifications. But if it's an elected position, I think the basic qualification is resident elected.
Right.
I agree. I and Oney had touched upon this now. You know, after the last election, especially, should we make that an appointed position? That's gonna that's not gonna sit well with the voters. So if there's any opposition to it sounds like we do have opposition. If there's anyone in agreement that thinks that we should go forward with this one, please let us know now.
Should we consider making this a for hire position? Then you can have the requirements that you need. Is that something we would do?
Well, we have the finance director, which is an appointed position.
Right. If we want to establish requirements to make it a, you know, bachelor's degree or whatever, then we're going to have to consider making both a for hire position in the future.
Yeah, and Mr. Marino, did you say that we are unable to do that as far as an elected official?
There are many communities that have appointed town treasurers, not always elected. So if you were to make that change from elected to appointed, I believe that's within your authority. The current position would serve until the next election. And then at the next election, the town treasurer would not be on the ballot. And the mayor, subject to the appointing process, would fill the vacancy.
Okay. So now if we decided that we're not going to change that, we're going to leave that as an elected official. Are we able to update the qualifications in order to run for that position?
I would say not beyond resident elector.
Okay.
Because you're narrowing the scope of who can run then, and I don't think that's legal.
Right. Okay.
Rob, I agree with you when you said the last election. Voters were extremely unhappy when they found out that the mayor appointed the guy that didn't win the election in a financial position. People were extremely irate. They were very upset. So I agree with you, Rob.
Okay. Well, I'm not necessarily saying that I disagree with his appointment. I'm just saying that, you know, I know the public perception, what the public perception was.
Yeah.
Okay, so the minimum requirements for the position of treasurer and finance director, whether elected or appointed, so that's something that we're not going to be able to move on.
Right.
However, if you flip to page 3, section 14, Tara Heider brings up raising the standard of qualifications for some cities' positions, such as public works director. She does mention city treasurer, which we said we're not going to be able to do, parks and rec director, and so forth, to require previous work experience in a related field, whether appointed or elected, and salary should be commensurate with the work experience. So if we move over to that item on page 3, is that something that we want to look at for our finance director, public works, parks and rec?
So, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but I'm getting the general kind of idea that maybe if we want to reword this and say minimum requirements for appointed positions, would that be, we're just summarizing it generally?
Yeah, I think that would actually make things a lot easier and a lot more clear.
Well, I don't know if you could say appointed positions, because we have many more than just these. You have, as we know, we have the fire commission, the police commission. I'm sure there's other commissions that I'm not aware of. You know what I mean? Mr. Marino, you said if they're appointed positions, we can create the standards, as you said. So these, we can specifically pick these three. Am I correct?
Yeah, you can create standards for appointed positions. You don't have to create standards for all appointed positions. That's fine.
Thank you. Answer my question. Good.
And if I can ask, are those full-time positions, right? Those are the full-time positions? that are appointed besides the chief of staff?
Yes.
Okay. So we can also, if you want to like clean it up, we can say for the full-time positions, like I don't think fire commission, I don't know how much the fire commission and the police commissioner.
Those are part-time, Owen.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And I don't think, I'm assuming, I don't know if they get paid as much as the treasurer. I'm assuming it's around the same if they do, so.
And now somebody who's
Mr.
already.
Mr. Chair, the record should reflect position. That Earl McCluster is in the meeting now.
Hey, thank you.
Rob, someone who's already appointed to the position, would they be grandfathered? Would we have to spell that out?
They would be grandfathered.
Yeah, I would say we would have to. Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Well, the other thing too, Mr. Chair, this is just to what you're going to consider. If you want to consider minimum qualifications for certain appointed things, you could agree to that tonight. You don't have to decide what they are. You could just kind of put right. that on your list of the stuff that you will discuss at a future meeting right. or later right. in this Understood. Meeting if you decide that.
Right. Okay. All right. So this sounds like something that we want to discuss a little further.
Yeah. Can I just also, Rob, add one other thing in the mix? Is it, I'm hearing appointed or elected. Is there an opportunity to like have it be like a committee forum that makes, you know, a decision on like via an interview process?
Well, when the mayor does make an appointment, it does have to be approved by the Board of Aldermen.
Okay.
So I guess that might be the
forum.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's already in place.
Thank you.
Okay, so the next item is notice to the public should be posted electronically and not necessarily published in the newspaper. Derby should look into more cost-saving alternatives such as electronic publishing and website postings. I don't recall, Mr. Marino, was that you that brought that up, that some items are required to be posted in a newspaper, but not necessarily all?
Yeah, well, correct. And the law is evolving on this as we're getting further and further away from newspapers. And as soon as that lobbying group kind of falls on their last leg, all postings will probably eventually be online. So my thought there is if you're going to make any changes, it would just be publication notices in accordance with state statute. So this way, again, you're not coming back to change your charter. It's just evolving with the state law.
Okay, so that's not necessarily something that we... So in other words, all municipalities at this point are required to put postings in the newspapers and pay that ridiculous fee.
Right, well, some are very specific, like say. Some will say that ordinance is not effective until 15 days after publication. That is a local charter provision on all things. Now you don't go to defer the statute on individual ones. So, but most municipalities are still doing it the old-fashioned way of publication in the newspaper.
And Mr. Chair, they're most of the provisions were changed in the charter the last time to provide for that, just basically to follow the statute. There are two sections that should be changed, in particular section 22 as it relates to publication of the preliminary estimates for the budget. And then there's another section further down, I think it's in the 50s. I can't call it up because I'm sharing the screen now. But those two are the only ones that were not corrected the last time. And again, I think that in addition to following the statute, I think we should have in our charter that at a minimum we affirmatively say that we want to have it on our website, that they shall be posted on the website.
Regardless if they're posted in the newspaper as well. Is that what you're saying?
Or whatever the statute is. But I think the statute's kind of going that way. But I think just for transparency for our own citizens here to know that there will be a reliable, consistent space that no matter what, it'll be on the city's websites, as an example.
I think we also have to respect the fact that there are a lot of older people in Derby who's I still read the paper, but I mean, who don't have computers. So you can't just post it on the website and not put it in the paper. You're going to push back from everybody who's 70 years old and up.
Well, no. In addition to whatever the statute says you have to do,
right.
Put it
right.
in the paper or whatever, but also to have it on the website or whatever way the commission deems to be I think what is it as important as anything else, because as media changes, there just needs to be a consistent. If somebody were to look at in the same spot, they would know, like if they want to find out if there's a legal notice, it shall be in such and such a spot, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, I think, as important as anything else that, it could be published in an online newspaper. But like you say, Ralph, you make a good point. There's if you don't have a computer, and it's right. not just the elderly.
No, that's that have true.
It's not just the elderly that have a barrier to the computers. It's people who are economically disadvantaged who can't afford a computer Excellent. Or access to the internet. So it's a twofold issue that we have seen in terms of access to online publications.
I agree, Mark.
All right. So.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Was someone about to speak? Okay. So do we want to keep this on? Is this something we want to move forward with, or is this something that we're going to bypass for the meantime? Do we have any opposition to moving on?
Well, I mean, like we said before, we can leave it on and clean it up in the next meeting if we need to. It seems like we just need a few tweaks to kind of.
Okay.
Make it right. And if you can't make the.
Yeah. And like Mark said, just to add this in addition to, just to make sure it's all in one spot. So, okay. So that's something that we'll move forward with. And that would go along with the next bullet point. Bid should be published on the city website for vendors to apply. The winning bidder should also be posted on the website. Is Mr. Marino, is that something that needs to be published in the newspaper? Is that a state statute requirement, or is that something we can just save the money on and just post it online?
That was changed already.
Well, yeah.
That was already changed.
Yeah, the Charter Section 57 provides made after public notice advertised as determined by the Finance Committee and the Finance Director.
Okay. All right, so then that's not something that we need to concern ourselves with.
Well, you may, I mean, again, that's one of the things where, I think, because they had a conversation at one of the committees Mr. Sampson had raised. Again, that's another one where you might say, as determined by the finance director, but you also might say, well, it at a minimum, it has to be, say, on the website or whatever the case is.
Agreed.
But the bidding process is laid out, so.
So we can just essentially add that to the previous one with all public postings and bids posted to the website.
You know, and I see it says Derby should look into more cost-saving alternatives. This isn't really a cost-saving alternative. This is a convenience, because to add it onto the website isn't costing us anything.
Right.
Just putting it in the paper.
Well, and just on the publication aspect of it, I'll just kind of give you a quick anecdote for one of the other towns I represented. They had received a grant for recycling. I think it was like $4,800. And by the time they finished paying for all the publication notices in the newspaper, it cost them more money than the grant was worth.
Wow.
So, you know, there is a lot of expense with the publication.
And two, the key thing is, because of the language is kind of old language, it says published in a paper. So if you could also pay to have it, published in an online only publication, that would be much cheaper too. But right now published, the attorneys have said that means published, meaning a physical newspaper, which is extremely expensive. I mean, the budget, the one that we had to print the budget, it was like almost $1,200 to print the budget, preliminary estimates for the budget.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but the question I'm going to bring up is, what do all the surrounding towns do?
Everybody's going in this direction.
That is correct.
Well, that makes a difference. Because that's the first thing somebody's going to say to you is, what does Ansonia do? What does Seymour do? What, you know? If we're all going,
well, everybody has to follow the statute, and some of the stuff has to be, is we still have to follow the statute. So, but if you get the charter up to date, when the statute changes, then we don't have to go back to charter revision. We just follow whatever the statute is.
Right.
So, sorry to be late to the game. Does that mean that we're asking our state electeds to work on a revision of the state statute?
Yes, so that's a statewide thing. A lot of the towns are doing it. That, you know, frankly, the newspaper lobby has been more effective than the cities and towns, frankly.
Okay, so that we'll look at that again in a coming meeting. The next bullet point is reassess this. The city donates $1,000 to the to Griffin Hospital annually. The tax board does not do it now, and there's no line item for it. So I think that that might be one of the items that we would look at in addition to the donation to the Derby Neck Library Association, the $500. Is this something we want to review, continue to discuss? Is there any opposition to that?
No opposition.
Is the $1,000 just donated to Griffin Hospital, or is it to a program at Griffin, or?
The way it's worded in the charter, it goes directly to the hospital.
So is there an opposite? I thought last time we agreed that if there was no liability to us for removing it, then we would just say strike both those from the charter.
Yeah, I mean, that makes the most sense.
Yeah.
And I don't believe, if I recall from last meeting, that there was actually a donation over the last couple of years. So probably right. Best to remove it.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, so we'll discuss that at an upcoming meeting as well. I guess the next bullet point would be considered additional donations to the city, to other charitable organizations within Derby. So that's essentially those three items.
Yeah.
The next item is the chief of police should be required to have at least a bachelor's degree in criminal justice, business administration, or other public applicable degrees. These items pertaining to the police department, then when the police chief retires, succession should remain with the deputy chief as long as they meet with the minimum qualifications for the position. If the deputy chief does not currently possess the qualifications for the position or in the process of obtaining a bachelor's degree, they could be appointed as an acting or interim for a period of 6 months until they complete their minimum requirements. And then he goes on to say, if the appointed deputy chief does not qualify for the position of chief of police, testing for the position should be limited to qualified candidates within the department who presently hold the rank of sergeant or higher. There are no qualified candidates within the department who meet the minimum requirements of chief of police and pass the test, then only should testing be expanded outside for an outside hire. And then the other items were persons applying for a position of police officer should be vetted through an outside agency who will represent a qualified list of candidates only after administering written, oral, board, and other required tests. And it should, additionally, the chief of police should have the discretion to hire lateral transfers whose resume passes the minimum qualifications for a desired position, including passing a psychological test and a polygraph test. The police chief should establish a pay scale, vacation time, or sick time for each lateral hire commensurate with that of the candidate's work experience. And Mr. Bucell also brought that up during his portion of the public hearing, indicating that Derby should accept lateral hiring of police officers from different police departments, giving them a lie detector test before they can start working. Now going back to the discussion on the chief, I don't necessarily think that this is something that we should be able to undertake within the next three or four meetings in order to get this on the ballot. I think that's something that we're going to need to delve much deeper into and discuss with other municipalities on how they proceed. And I think we discussed, Attorney Moreno advised us about the collective bargaining agreement for the hiring of police officers and lateral transfers. So if anyone disagrees with me that thinks that we should move forward with that, we can certainly do so. But if there's
Rob, can
any
I
any discussion? Go ahead, Chuck.
I think you're right. I think this police stuff has a lot that we can't tackle right here within our time constraints. There's a couple of what you call low-hanging fruits that are really no-brainers here that we can get rid of, like the supernumeraries. There's only like two supernumeraries left, you know, in the testing pool and stuff. But I think we should, my opinion is that we should table this stuff so we can get study it and talk to the people and the necessary people, whether it be the union, whether it be, you know, whoever. Just we could even get a study at a police department, but I think it's something we should hold to the future.
I think that there are two different classes of activity here. One is the chief of police, who is not a part of the union or the collective bargaining agreement, and the other is the other pieces. And so on the first piece, where the chief of police should be required to have these requirements, I'm not opposed to that at all. Again, that next piece in there, is that how it reads now, that when the chief of police retires, succession should remain with the deputy chief? Is that what we have in charter now?
Negative. It says it shall be replaced by the lieutenant.
Okay. So yeah, I think that depending on when we think we're going to, you know, come back and do charter revision again, then to leave it there is to leave us without the best choice possible for our town, for Derby. And so I think that it's not such an arduous task to see what other hiring standards are, what other people are doing. And I'd be glad to participate on a subcommittee to do that between now and the next meeting, so we can have a comprehensive report on what others are doing. And secondarily, I would also say that it's not so much as important what others are doing, because if we do what everyone else does, we might do things wrong just because other people do them wrong. But I think that we could quickly come to a set of choices that would allow us to make a decision to put forward.
Rob, I got being a former Teamster, I know a lot of stuff that involves appointments of people from like the police department. I'm looking at this. You really need to know what the collective bargaining agreement in your town says about opportunities for advancement. So you don't know what the wording is, and you're going to get pushback from the union that's going to say, wait a minute, if you're appointing this guy or he has the power to appoint, how do my guys advance?
So point of order, the idea of the difference between the chief of police position and the those that are in the collective bargain agreement, I think that's the first separation we need to make, because those are two different things.
Right.
I don't believe that statement would apply to the chief's position.
No, not to the chief's position. I'm referring to the bullet that says the chief of police should have the discretion to hire lateral transfers whose resume pass the minimum qualifications.
So yeah, I would ask that we handle the first one first, and then go to that one, since it's a different thing.
So, Carl, if I hear you correctly, you're saying you want to discuss the replacement of the police chief, the succession of the police chief, and then we'll put off the obviously because of the collective bargaining agreement, the hiring of officers and advancement of officers within the ranks.
Just remember, if we do this discussion, it comes also with this discussion that another section of the charter has to be amended, because the deputy chief is not a recognized position in our city charter. It says lieutenant. So we have to create a position of deputy chief. That's what I brought up before.
Right.
The deputy chief is only recognized by the bargaining unit. So
So because we don't have that, again, that that's something that we're going to be asking the voters to create. However, how many, Chuck, do you know how many lieutenants we have in the Derby Police Department?
Lieutenants as per the charter, or lieutenants as per what they're recognized as?
What they're recognized as.
Well, we have, right now it has a chief, and they call the deputy chief the deputy chief, but by rank and by charter, he's the lieutenant. The two lieutenants that are there are actually detective sergeants.
Okay, so we have two. So essentially, rather than...
We have, you have one. The deputy chief is really not, according to charter, there is no deputy chief position.
Understood, yeah, but you said there's two lieutenants.
No, one.
One. Oh, okay. I thought
you one said lieutenant, two. But the two people that go by lieutenant are actually detective sergeants.
So why don't we just call people what they are instead of giving them names that are not? I mean, we don't need, it's not like deep surgery there. I mean,
right.
We're using words and say that because we use that word, we need to change the charter, and that's not necessarily the case. Unless someone has a compelling reason to change the name of the title. We're calling a person something when they're designated as something else. So there's the chief of police, there's a lieutenant, and there are two deputy sergeants. Is that correct?
No. That's where the collective bargaining comes in, and this went years back. By charter, there is no deputy chief position. So the deputy chief is actually a lieutenant. The two lieutenants that are there are actually detective sergeants. The charter as it reads in, I can look it up. It says, there shall be no less than one lieutenant, no less than one detective sergeant. It was just something that was in with, over the years, it went through. And again, if you want to change it to the deputy chief, we have to create a deputy chief's position, because I don't believe that we can make one section of the charter say the deputy chief will rise to the position of deputy chief.
So or
another section of the charter, it says the lieutenant shall be automatically promoted to.
So for the purpose of this discussion, my question is the lieutenant's position subject to collective bargaining? That's a yes or no?
I don't know.
Okay. Are the deputy sergeants?
Detective sergeants are.
Okay.
They are.
So then if they're subject to collective bargaining, it's a different conversation than the chief and the lieutenant, right? And if we're saying we want to change the lieutenant's title to deputy chief, you know, that's fine. It doesn't matter to me. I think if maybe someone's concerned that they're a lieutenant instead of a deputy chief, you know, we're writing something that uses nomenclature that doesn't exist. So why don't we use the nomenclature that exists so we can express the movement within what we have right now, as opposed to trying to change the charter to do that.
Then then the charter will remain as it is. It's already in the section. Let me look at it here in the section. I have it right here. It's in
the deputy chief and the deputy chief and the chief are not part of the collective bargaining agreement.
It has here it is in section 41. The police department in said city shall consist of one chief, no less than one lieutenant, no less than one detective sergeant, no less than three sergeants, no less than one detective, and on and on and on.
But the question is the chief and the deputy chief are not part of the collective bargaining agreement.
No, they're not. But what I'm saying is and I asked this question last time, how can we have to change section 41 to recognize a deputy chief, because it's written in the promotion for the chief. It says the vacancy, blah, 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 blah. I have to find it here, but it says that, if a vacancy arises in the rank of the chief, the lieutenant shall automatically succeed to chief.
And the lieutenant is part of the collective bargaining agreement, correct?
I don't know, Rob. I can't say yes or no.
No, the other two lieutenants are part of the collective bargaining agreement. The deputy chief is not part of the collective bargaining agreement.
So there is no deputy chief right now. There's the chief, there's a lieutenant, and there's two detective sergeants. The two detective sergeants are a part of the collective bargaining agreement. My understanding is that the lieutenant and the chief are not. So the only question to be answered is the lieutenant a part of the collective bargaining agreement? If he's not a part of the collective bargaining agreement, then unless we're just trying to change the name of it to make it sound different, then that's one issue is what happens with the chief and the lieutenant, and the other issue is what happens with everyone in the collective bargaining agreement.
If they're in, if the lieutenant is in the collective bargaining unit, you're not changing his name from lieutenant to deputy chief without.
The thing is, the collective bargaining agreement, the two positions, let me put it a different way, because the decision was made whenever it was made to make all these changes and the charter wasn't changed. So that's a discussion for a separate day. But the two positions, the chief, the top position, and the second position, regardless of what you call it, are not part of the collective bargaining agreement. Number three and four are part of the collective bargaining agreement.
So that goes to my point that the two that are not a part of the collective bargaining agreement are those that are the subject of this paragraph that says when the chief retires, succession will remain with the deputy chief, attempting to say lieutenant. So my concern about that is that not to pass it over because of that simple nomenclature change. If we were going to adopt that, all you have to do is change deputy chief to lieutenant, period. And then this nomenclature would be correct in this paragraph. That's not my problem with the paragraph. My problem with the paragraph is the automatic succession of the second in command to the first in command. That to me is problematic.
We don't have to change the nomenclature if we don't use that deputy chief. It's already in the charter. Section 44 says, when any vacancy occurs in the office of the chief of police, then the present lieutenant shall automatically become chief of police, provided said lieutenant possesses a minimum of associate's degree and so forth.
And so what I'm saying is that I think that's the automatic succession is problematic. It doesn't go to get us the best possible person. It just says, you know, whoever's in second seat gets first seat. You know, if you take almost anything that you do, any business, any sports team, any organization, because someone is a good number two does not make them the best number one, especially if we're talking about a free market system. And a lot of people like to talk about free market, and free market says is that you go out and you get the best available person for that job. And I think that's what's in the best interest of the city.
Okay, so then just let me clarify. So rather than continuing a conversation on this item in particular, we can agree that we're going to move forward with the succession of the police chief and the hiring of officers. We're not going to move forward on, because that's going to require much more in-depth. So is that fair?
Wait, say that again.
That we're going to move forward and discuss further the succession of the police chief, and we're going to not move forward with the hiring of an officer.
Well, I think we spent more than a minute on the chief and the lieutenant. So let's Agreed. Take a minute or two on the other piece so we can read it separately now that we're talking about those two things separately, please.
Okay, so
I think we really need to know whether the lieutenant is in the CBA or not.
That's the big question, Rob. You're correct. So I think that this is something that we should move forward on and have further discussion in the next meeting. But before the next meeting, we need to find out if the sergeant belongs in the CBA.
Who will find that out?
If I could say, I've said it and I'll repeat it. The chief and the second in command are not part of the collective bargaining agreement.
What do you mean by the second in command, Mark? I'm a little confused.
Well, the title he has that people call him is deputy chief, but in the charter it says lieutenant. But then in the collective bargaining agreement refers to lieutenant, but they're actually not referring to the second in command. They're talking about the other people who were named lieutenant.
Right. Who are actually sergeant.
Detective sergeants, but but those positions are called out as lieutenant in the collective bargaining agreement.
I think like Vinnie Marino is going to have to give us his opinion on this, because if the union's going to argue that, well, number two, that's us, we have the lieutenants.
It's actually not, though. There's a clear understanding in the police department who the number two is and what the succession part of that is. There's not confusion among the other two people that have the title of lieutenant. There's the deputy chief is the second in command. Just so we could use a consistent term, it's second in command. The second in command person is the person. The second in command and the chief are not in the collective bargaining agreement. Everybody else is.
So they're referred to as the deputy chief within the ranks. But per the charter, he's right. A lieutenant.
Correct. Right. That's correct.
I think that's one of the things that Carl may be talking about, is there seems to be some confusion as to why they're called, you know, one thing in the charter and another in the department or whatever. It's creating confusion for me. I'm just trying to set them all in line. And I think Carl has a point there, that why don't they all say the same thing? Why don't we call them, you know, whatever the specific title is, and keep it consistent across everything we're doing.
And that could be fixed with a simple paragraph that says that the chief of police, the second in command for the Derby Police Department, will be designated as the deputy chief. And the two officers that follow in chain of command will be called lieutenants. Ba-dow. And then you just let that flood through the whole document. Those two are, and if they're already called lieutenants in the previous charter, they are. If they don't want to be changed to be called lieutenants and want to continue to be detective sergeants, then fine. But that's not the gist of this paragraph or what it's asking us. What's really asking us is, or really trying to suggest, is that there is an order of succession from the second in command to the command position, both of which are not covered by the collective bargaining agreement. And then there are qualifications for everybody else that are laid out here that would be the subject of the second conversation.
I'm wondering, like you said, we have two lieutenants, right? So if one of the lieutenants is going to become the deputy chief, how is that determined? Because you'll have two lieutenants who will both meet the minimum requirements. Then is it a seniority appointment from there?
No, they have to have a test.
Okay, so the two lieutenants pass the test. How do you pick between the two lieutenants? That's what I'm saying. Does it become CBA where opportunity at advance, they both meet the minimum requirements, they both pass the test, who's the most senior man?
No, it's not a collective bargaining. A deputy chief is, or that position, second in command, it's not in the collective bargaining agreement. It's by the charter.
But the two lieutenants that are going for the job are in the CBA.
And they
they're not the only ones that could go for it. The others, right. Anybody above rank of sergeant, right now, the way it reads, anybody above rank of sergeant could go for it.
And I think this may beg the question for the committee as to, should the charter be so specific as to really state the chain of command and the succession plan? Or is that, do you want to bind the hands of the leaders in the future? Or do you want to simply leave it to them to make that decision? You know, you have a police commission, you'll have a mayor, you'll have a board of aldermen, and you do not have to be so specific in your charter as to say, you know, this is what you must do next. Because you do, you know, the reason for the inconsistencies is historical, that things have been changed by way of just happenstance, collective bargaining, and not updated in the charter. And that's not inconsistent throughout the state. But I think the first question that you all should kind of kick around is whether or not you want this to be so specific.
If you're going to change, then, I mean, the whole section of the police department, section 40, 41 through 40, 44, I mean, you're going to have to change all that if you get there.
The simplest, I actually deleted it in my version.
Pardon me?
In my version, I deleted the whole thing. Because, again, you have a police commission that oversees the day-to-day operation of your police department. You know, and all of these, you know, and when I was reading through it, I deleted the whole section, police department. Other than saying there shall be the police department, what else do you need to say?
I think you need some kind of way of appointing a chief. You're going to get run into the situation that you have in Shelton right now.
the statute gives that authority to the police commission.
I don't believe so. I don't know. I've never heard that statute. I know it's in our city charter that the chief, as it says in section 41, that the lieutenant is automatically succeeds the chief when there's a vacancy.
Right.
Then it fills it. It goes into, you know, if there's a vacancy in lieutenant, how that is filled. How there's a vacancy if they're police officers. And I don't know. I think if you just leave nothing out, you're just throwing it up to whatever. I think that's why I said I think that this needs a little more study in under our timeline, that maybe we should, you know, be able to delve into this. There's a couple pieces in there that are, as Rob put it, the low-hanging fruit that could be changed, but not in this. This takes in a lot. I'm sure that if we delete this whole police department thing, you're going to get pushback from the union. I mean, there's going to be no question about that.
You know, so the question I asked Vin is, does the police commission have anything in it right now, any charge or any responsibility for making these choices?
No.
So then the question would be, if you deleted it all, Vin, then you would then say, you would be suggesting giving that authority to the police commission.
You'd have to fight it that way, because I know vacancies and testing procedures are part of collective bargaining. I know that's in the collective bargaining agreement.
I'm pulling up the statute to deal with police commissions. The police commission has the day-to-day, basically the police commission oversees the day-to-day operations of your police department. They hire and fire your police chief.
Hire and fire?
Correct.
Okay, sounds like if that's their responsibility, hurrah. You know, that gets you how you get a chief, you know. And so I think that how would we deal with the commission's responsibility? If the commission's responsibility was to be adjusted at all, then how would that be done?
Well, so it's section 7-276. It's Connecticut General Statute that says such boards of police commissioners shall have all the powers given to them by the general statutes, shall have the general management and supervision of the police department of such towns and of the property and equipment used in connection therewith, shall make all needful regulations for the government thereof, not contrary to law, and may prescribe suitable penalties for the violation of any such regulations, including suspension or removal from office of any officer or member of such police department. They shall have the sole power of appointment, promotion, and removal of the officers and members of such police department under such regulations as the adopts for the purposes, and such appointees shall hold office during good behavior and until removed for cause upon written changes. So, you know, again, you can do this by way of your charter. I just think for purposes of getting into the minutiae of, you know, the concern of what are you going to do when you have two lieutenants that are of equal status. Maybe they both came on to the job in the same year. They both passed the same test. They both got the same score. They both, you know, are of equal excellence. Who makes that decision at that point? No, I would submit to you, I believe that the police commission currently would have that authority under section 7-276. and it's not necessary to be in your charter, but ultimately that's up to the body and then the voters.
So my only other question, Vin, is how is the police commission selected?
I believe...
they're appointed by the mayor.
By the mayor.
And I have a question.
But I believe they serve staggered terms.
No, they do not. They're appointed by the mayor.
Vin, they serve at the pleasure of the mayor.
If the CBA says that the lieutenants, as well as any other police person, gets promoted through fitness and ability, and they pass the tests and all, now the police commissioner or whoever is going to decide who becomes the next chief? Or is it the CBA that says, our guys passed the test, and who's the most senior man? He's the one who should be promoted. How does that work? I mean, that's an argument between the two, right?
I would say the decision is up to your commission.
And they're going to say, so we have to
see unless they're bound by charter.
Because I'm thinking they're going to say, well, we have a collective bargaining agreement that says you'll promote us based on our seniority and fitness and ability.
But the police chief's position is not part of the CBA. So it might, you know, I may have to be right through the ranks, but the chief's position is not part of the CBA.
So essentially you're saying, Ben, that we're in a unique position that we have our charter that outlines the hiring. When if we just struck everything from the charter and allowed for the Connecticut General Statutes to rule the day, that would be the way to go.
Yeah, I think, though, I do agree that, you know, it might be a little, this is not the police department section is not something that I think from a low-hanging fruit standpoint.
Right.
I would attack all at once. What I would say is, on this one, if you're leaning in the direction of striking the whole thing, I would leave that to phase number two, and I would get the police chief involved, get, you know, maybe the president of the union involved, and get some dialogue, because again, you have history here that we may not be familiar with, and you know, it's not for me as a lawyer to come in here and say strike it all. This is your community, and you should benefit from historical knowledge.
So one other legal question, Vin. So if if something in the charter is in conflict with the Connecticut State General Statutes, then which one prevails?
I hate to say there's no easy answer to that. There is a statute that grants, it's called Home Rule. Home Rule Authority grants the locality in certain instances to have precedential effects over the statutes. So it's on a case-by-case basis. So generally you would say the statute prevails over the charter, but many statutes will say, notwithstanding what your charter says, this is what you must do. So to the extent that the statute does not limit that, generally, I say the organic law of your municipality, which is your charter, would prevail. But we'd have to look at it on a case-by-case basis.
Hey, Rob, you know what? We just spent half an hour going back and forth on this. I think this just became really high-hanging fruit.
Yes, I agree.
I think we need to move on.
I'm thinking that this might be, you know, we can discuss it further if you'd like, but I'm getting the sense that this is something like Mr. Marino said, that we're going to need to discuss with the chief, discuss with the union head, and get a historical perspective before we move on this.
I agree, Rob.
Yeah, I'll simply say it would be, you know, in the season we're in, I think it would be not fully fulfilling our responsibility if we don't deal with some part of this. The top part of it, the non-unionized part, is what I consider to be low-hanging fruit. The only question is does it conflict with the statute? And if home rule is the rule of law, then that's our decision to make. And I'll leave it there for the next conversation. I guess someone's going to have the chief and these guys involved in the next conversation. We're going to inform their opinion about what should happen.
Carl, I agree that something needs to be done and looked at. But given our time constraint, I'm not sure that that's going to be able to happen in the next 4 to 6 weeks, though.
Let it be on the record that I offered to work in subcommittee with whoever else is willing to move this along as quickly as possible to make sure that we get as much as possible before us as soon as possible.
Okay. Let me ask you this as well. I mean, can we bring in the police? Are we allowed to bring in the police chief to bring it? I mean,
to invite him to the meeting?
So we can kind of like get a little clarification or the police commission. I mean, I have no problem, you know, helping out on a subcommittee as well. You know, we have responsibilities. So if that's, you know, if it's one more night we have to have sit down with the subcommittee, then just let me know. I'll help.
Okay. So.
Well, you know what, Rob, if nothing else, that first bulletin about the chief of police should be required to at least have a bachelor's degree in criminal justice. I think we can act on that.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Then let's do that then. Carl and Oni, we can move on that. We'll invite the police chief. I mean, it can't hurt to at least have that discussion moving forward. I mean, and again, it doesn't mean that we're going to discard it altogether, because I think it's something that needs to be addressed. But we'll move it forward for further discussion. And in the meantime, we can invite the chief. And
I think you have to invite the union president, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So let me just be clear. So if we're talking about the chief of police and the lieutenant or deputy chief, whatever we're going to call it, then we do not need the union involved in that conversation. And there are two people who have volunteered for subcommittee to begin that conversation, so the whole committee does not have to be tied up in a lengthy conversation about that. We can surmise that conversation and present it to you.
No, you need the union there, because everything trickles down. The promotions and everything else, it's not just simply the chief and the lieutenant and the deputy chief and the chief, because everything goes upon that.
I don't understand that statement. They're not in the collective bargaining agreement. So what goes down from there, that's as a separate.
I'm offering my experience that's going to tell you what's going to happen, and you're jeopardizing losing the whole thing. That it's not just those two. Those two have a stake in the game. If you invite in the commission has no idea of how this works, because they've never been involved in it before.
Mr. Chairman, just to try to maybe move this along, what I can do is I will agree to meet with these gentlemen who want to serve on the subcommittee and the police chief, and we can take a look at this issue and report back.
Okay, that's fantastic. So, Oni and Carl, was there anyone else that would like to join in on that?
Yes, I would.
Chris LaRocque, okay, perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right, so Chris, Oni, and Carl, and Vin, will you be able to touch base with them on this?
Yeah, if you could do me a favor, can you just circulate an email between the four of us or five of us, and then I'll take it from there?
Absolutely.
All right, thank you, Vin.
I'll send that out.
Thanks, Mark. All right. All right, so we're going to move on to the next bullet point was Larry Bustelo. And again, this most of it discusses the police department as well. Incoming police officers should have a bachelor's degree or alternatively have served in the military. Derby residents who grew up here and attended Derby school system could receive 5 extra points during the testing process for incoming police officers. Derby should accept lateral hiring from different police departments, giving them a lie detector test before they can start working. And I think we all agree that that's collective bargaining, that that's something that we're not going to be able to, at least in the next 3 to 4 weeks, take on. Is everyone in agreement with that?
Yes.
Okay. We can bring some of that stuff up in this when we talk in our subcommittee as well.
Great. Okay, so the next section is Alderman Sill, members of the Board of Aldermen. Alderwomen should serve 4-year terms. I think we discussed that earlier as well when we talked about the mayor. So that would be elected officials moving 4-year terms. So that's something that we are going to move forward and discuss. The next item, which was interesting, and I'd be curious to see what the public appetite for that is the tax board should be combined with the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen, increase the membership of the aldermen for each ward instead of three, and establish a 5-7 member subcommittee of the Board of Aldermen to deal with the budget, who would then present to the full board of for approval. So just to give insight, Derby obviously has three wards, and there's three aldermen per ward. Mr. Sill is suggesting that instead of three aldermen per ward, we add a fourth alderman, and that would be to increase the membership to so we could establish a 5-7 member subcommittee of the Board of Aldermen to deal with the budgets that the current existing tax board deals with annually. So if there's anyone opposing going having further discussion on that, I think that's something that is certainly worthwhile to discuss.
I can certainly say that I don't have any real appetite for this. I think that's not close to low-hanging fruit, but if we decide as a group that we will go forward with it, I'll gladly entertain.
Yeah, it's Chris, it's not something that we're saying tonight that this is something we're proposing to the Board of Aldermen. I'm just saying this is something that we can have further discussion on at our next meeting.
Yeah, I think it's worth another look. It's a massive change, but I do think it's something, you know, that it's at least worth another look.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll move forward on that topic.
Rob, can I ask you one thing? Would this be the time when we would look to change it from Board of Aldermen / Alderwomen to Board of Alders, like some of the other cities have done?
I'm sure we can. However,
that might be
Mr. Garfalo, I'm sure you can elaborate as to how recent we just, I want to say the Alderwomen has just been recently added to the charter. I don't remember exactly how long, but it was fairly recent. If you can.
Yeah. In the last one, a few years ago, it was added, but that doesn't mean you can't decide to make it Board of Alders or City Council. There were a couple.
It's very clumsy, I have to say, Board of Aldermen over with.
Yeah, agreed. All right, so if that's something you really want to change it to the Board of Alders, we can certainly do that as well.
I like that.
I'll add it to the bottom of the list if you want to consider.
Perfect.
It.
Thank you. All right, so we'll move forward with combining the tax board with the as a subcommittee of the Board of Aldermen for discussion, and then also changing the name to the Board of Alders. The next item is modify the makeup of the Board of Assessment Appeals. Currently, that's Section 55 of the Charter. That says that there are three members of the Board of Appeals, Assessment Appeals is the President of the Board of Aldermen, Alderwomen, the Chairperson of the Tax Board, and the City Treasurer. So those three people make up the Board of Assessment Appeals. So there was no suggestion as to how to modify the makeup. His suggestion was just to modify it. So those are the members that currently exist.
If I may, Mr. Chair, there were a couple issues with that. Number one, they're having it, the board structured that way is kind of unique to Derby. Most other towns have like a separate board.
Okay.
But at a minimum, there's no provision for like an alternate member. So like if one of those people can't make it, then they can't, you know, it makes it difficult. A lot of times in other towns, they have people who are familiar with property valuation and so forth as a way to do it. But it may be at a minimum, it could be like either that those positions or their designee, so that if they couldn't make it or they didn't want to do it or they can't do it or whatever, that they could then appoint somebody in their stead to do that.
Sit in on it for them, okay.
That might be a thing where, you know, in the appointment you could put minimum qualifications if you felt that was important.
Sure. Does anyone, do we want to move forward on this and for further discussion?
I have no problem if you wanted like the his or her designation. That's not a big, I think that's fair.
Okay.
Simple. Yeah, I want to move forward.
Okay. All right, so we'll move forward on further discussion of modifying the makeup to adding a designee. All right, so now we are on to page 3. Mr. Stanky, a provision for minority representation on the Board of Aldermen and Tax Board currently has a mandatory minority representation. And I think, Chuck, you clarified earlier.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to clarify. I don't mean changing Board of Aldermen right now to the minority representation. Just if the earlier suggestion was combining both or adding another, eliminating the Board of Apportionment and adding another alderman or adding another ward. It, just that I was concerned that right now the Board of Apportionment has minority representation. If we eliminate that, Board of Aldermen doesn't. And I believe Mr. Marino said that if we add any more people to the Board of Aldermen, that statute requires us to have minority representation.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's what I assumed you meant, but I'm glad, thank you for clarifying that. So we can just add that with the previous one, that if we do combine the tax board under the Board of Aldermen, that we will update to have a provision of minority representation. Okay. Mr. Mayhew suggested that we all elected officials serve 4-year terms. We discussed that already. Set term limits for elected officials. You know, I don't know if that's something you want to discuss when we talk about 4-year terms. We can certainly do that as well. So that'll be part of our discussion of 4-year terms and whether or not to have term limits.
Yeah.
Reducing or eliminating the composition of the tax board should work together. Consideration should be made to include data and input from the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities. So again, that's you know, reducing or eliminating the composition of the tax boards. So having, again, that's a combination of the tax board under the Board of Aldermen. Redefining the number of wards in the city and reducing the number of aldermen who serve in that manner. I think that's going to be part of the discussion is if we eliminate the tax board and add it to the Board of Aldermen, I don't know, that's not necessarily going to reduce the number of aldermen, however, it's going to increase it. So I think that goes along with further discussion. Mm-hmm. The next item is Tara Heider raised the standard of qualifications for some city positions, such as public works director, parks and rec director, to require previous work experience in related field, whether appointed or elected, salary should be commensurate with work experience. And I believe we're moving forward on that from previously from what Charlie Sampson had brought up earlier.
For the non-elected.
Exactly. Yeah. So for the, for the appointed position.
We're appointed, not appointed.
Or yep. Okay, the next item is if a person who works for the city or works for a company that performs work for the city, they would need a waiver by the Board of Aldermen by unanimous vote to allow them to serve as an elected position. That's currently how it is written now. I don't know that that's something that we would want to change or rewrite.
I just want to add, brother, it got soundedly defeated in the two previous ones.
Yeah. I don't necessarily have an appetite to move forward on that item. If there's anyone that does, let me know.
It, just to clarify, the last one, that question was defeated. The question that was on there was to eliminate the whole conflict section altogether.
Okay.
That would have been so that there wouldn't be a conflict to work for the city and be on a city board. That was the question that was on there.
Yeah, so essentially the voters said that they do want the checks and balance with the unanimous approval from the Board of Aldermen. Okay.
One, there was a suggestion. I don't know that it made it into these things, but it was suggested to, I thought it was suggested somewhere, but maybe it didn't make it, but it was suggested to get rid of the waiver section and just say if you're elected official, you can't work for the city or vice versa. But I don't know that that was like formally made or where that was, to be honest with you. I don't know. I didn't see it on any list. I don't know.
I didn't see that either.
That may have been discussed the last time. So, I mean, those are things if there are other things that didn't come up, you could always bring them up to be considered.
Right. Okay. The next item is was from Emery Actor. The town website to list every official board member or a commission member along with a town email address for each person. That's not necessarily a charter issue, and that is on the agenda for Thursday's Community Relations Subcommittee of the Board of Aldermen to discuss. So that's something that will be, so that's not something that we're going to need to move forward with. It's moving forward within the subcommittee. All commission members, especially the police commissioner, should be elected positions instead of appointed by the mayor.
I think we should, I like this one. I think we should continue the conversation on it.
Okay.
In some way, not necessarily exactly as written, but commission, I think we should look at that in light of where we're at today and what we see around us.
Mr. Chair, just to go back to the second item that Mrs. Hyder brought up. So what did you decide you wanted to do with that? I'm sorry, I was trying to do two things here at once.
That's all right. So we're not gonna move that the waiver would be no longer be required. So we're just essentially gonna have no action.
Okay. Okay. Sorry.
Okay. The next item from Mr. Actor was all commission members, especially the police commission, should be varying demographics and backgrounds representative of all parts of Derby. Commissions should be enlarged or changed if necessary to include more diversity. I think that would go along with the previous bullet point.
Agreed.
His item two says he wants all those appointed commissions to be elected.
Right. Yeah. So that would be up to the voters to create that diversity. So I think that those two bullet points go hand in hand. So if we want to discuss enlarging them or making them an elected instead of appointed. So that's something that we're gonna move forward and talk with next time.
I mean, varying demographics and backgrounds represented of all parts of Derby, that's not really a charter issue.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, we could certainly create, through the charter, create the conditions to allow more diversity of folks to be able to be, be included in such. But agreed, that's not necessarily a charter issue by itself.
This next bullet point says public accountability must be put into practice. Members of the boards, aldermen, and other public servants should be responding to constituent correspondence in a timely manner and professional manner. And again, that's on the agenda for the Community Relations Subcommittee on Thursday of this week.
And if I may, real quick, Rob, isn't some of that, I know, isn't that some of that covered by the Ethics Committee as well? I mean, part of that, if he was talking about public accountability, wouldn't the ethics board kind of something to cover some of that as well? Isn't there something in place already?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. So I'll check with Drew. Are you on? Are you still here?
I'm here.
What are your thoughts on that? On being an ethics commissioner?
Pretty Marino could probably better touch on the Board of Ethics and its charge. I think some of the things you guys are talking about here, while they're very actively concerning issues, especially in light of the culture right now, I just don't know how many of them are going to be able to be governed by the charter, particularly some of the diversity issues and things like that.
Right.
Those on either town committee know how it is for us to find volunteers of any creed or any sort of diversity, let alone, you know, to cherry pick and pick one group or another. I think the more the merrier. I think we all are of the same ilk in Derby at this point. It would be great to get more diversity. I just don't know that you guys can force that via charter, but right. I'll keep it for Marino, to be honest. I don't know.
You know, I would agree. First of all elected and appointed officials are going to be subject to the Code of Ethics and subject to a complaint under the Code of Ethics and a review by the Board of Ethics. You know, I think although the intention is well served, I think it's just factually impossible to compel diversity, whether at any point in time, because it is all a volunteer or a step up moment for any individual. And, you know, you can't compel someone of any class or creed or race or gender or sexuality to run for office. Most of the smart ones don't. So I think the best you can do is, and I think to this point, the public accountability, again, building that into your charter, is, I understand the intent, but again, your charter should be the basic organic law of your community and not get into the weeds of, you know, you have to stand 6 feet apart. You have to show up to the meeting 15 minutes. I mean, you can't, it would be nice, but how about commission members must read the agenda before they appear? They must know their regulations. This is not specific to Derby. I represent 10 municipalities and have worked with more than 20 municipalities across the state. And volunteers are volunteers. There are zoning members who do not know their zoning regulations. There are wetland commissioners who don't know how to spell wetlands. There are, you know, council members, aldermen who show up without having read the agenda. So, you know, those are things that would be nice if you put out in your charter and say you must, but you can't compel a volunteer to do anything.
You would be opening
up. You can't hold them accountable through your code of ethics.
You'd be opening up a can of worms you can't close.
Yeah. Well, essentially, that would just be changing from appointed to elected. So we would let the voters decide.
Yeah.
All right. The final item was Ms. Curtick has suggested that we add a fourth ward and equally divide the number of voters in each ward. Three aldermen in each of the four wards would provide more equal division for each ward, totaling 12 members. That's similar to what Mr. Sill is suggesting, having increasing the number to 12 members. However, he was adding a fourth member to each ward, not necessarily another ward with three additional members. Ms. Kurth, I'm not sure, and if you can elaborate, maybe I'm reading it incorrectly. It says equally divide the number of voters in each ward. Are you saying eligible voters or people that actually vote? Because I'm, and Vin, maybe you can chime in too. I'm pretty certain that they are equally divided as far as population, but you're not necessarily going to be able to divide it by the number of people who actually vote.
Mark was also saying that the city, it's time now that they have to look at the census and everything and evenly, Mark said that they have to revise it. It's time that the city does that. That's what Mark had said. So now we would have to do that, get the count and everything. And then you also have to, with the state representatives and everybody, you know, those districts and everything. So that's why, since we have to do that, we're gonna have to change. So it's easy. It's right now, because the third ward is the largest, if we could equally divide our wards, that would be so much better.
If you think about it from its genesis, the way we handle it with Congress, your aldermen from the specific wards are representing not just electors and voters. They're representing the people within their district that they live in, regardless of whether or not they vote. So if you were going to do it, I would say I would steer clear of the word voter or elector and its resident. How many residents should be in a district? If you have 13,000, or make the math easier, I know it is 13,000 or more, but if you had 12,000 and you wanted to have four wards, you would have 3,000 people per ward. And I think that's perfectly easy to do. It'd be no different than a congressional district.
Okay. And what I had said previously was that the charter says now we have three wards and it has to be redistricted, or the lines adjusted after the census. It wasn't done after the 2010 census. So the last time it was done was in after the 2000 census. So really, it makes sense for us to wait another year till we get the census numbers and then do that. Right now, if there's three wards, there's about 12,000 people, so it'll be 4,000 each. And if you change it, it would do that. But I think it's good to have the discussion, and then probably good to have the registrar of voters come in, because it has an impact. Four wards would have an impact on the election and the costs that go with it.
When are the census results going to be published? Do you know that, Mark?
They would be done probably by the end of the year. They have to be presented to the president by the end of the year. Now, with the COVID, I don't know if that's going to be delayed, but we would have time next calendar year. And again, the drawing of the lines for the Charter Revision Commission could propose how many wards. The setting of the lines, or the adjusting of the lines, that is governed by federal law and state statute, and it really lies with the legislative authority ultimately.
Okay.
The Board of Aldermen would set, specifically say where the lines are. So, we would get, once we get the census data, then the Board of Aldermen would appoint a committee to say, all right, here's, the lines are where they are. Do they need to be adjusted? And it's not based on voters, it's based on population. So, I mean, could we do it now? We could do it now, but the data would be 10 years old, and we'd have to redo it in 10 months from now, or less than 10 months from now.
Right, okay.
Mr. Chair, on this point, it's probably best to, as Mark was suggesting, to wait, because the extent one of the goals of the committee is to encourage diversity. Once you have that census data in, if you wanted to make it a fourth ward, that's one way you might get more diversity, because you're making the ward smaller, which is going to then create a district or districts where you may have, whether it be socioeconomic differences, whether it be race differences, but you might get differences in elected officials.
That's a very good point. Okay. All right, so I'm sorry, go ahead.
Before you go, one of the other impacts is, when, and this is the case that actually recently the state of Michigan dealt with this, is that when the redistricting was done and representatives were appointed based on political party from each of the two major parties, but that in Connecticut, where there are 42% of the voters are unaffiliated, if we're going to treat that, we also need to deal with the percentage of members making the decision or suggesting what doing the redrawing are to include, unaffiliated voters or non-registered but non-affiliated voters, so that it doesn't automatically become the sort of the tool, if you will, of the party that has the majority of voters in a two-party system to indicate how the lines are redistricted.
And to that point, and the town clerk may be able to speak to this more easily, but I believe that the statute, there's a difference between major parties and minor parties, and it's all driven by the number of votes cast in the last election. And while it's true that you have unaffiliated voters, there's not an unaffiliated party, it's an independent party, which people get confused between being an independent and an unaffiliated voter. So while I understand your statement, I think as a matter of state statute, if you're dealing with major parties, in order for a minor party to kind of have equal standing, it's all driven by the number of votes cast in the last election.
So I guess I'm not advocating for a party, but for unaffiliated. What I'll do is, Vint, when we meet on this other thing, I'll send you the case law from Michigan so you can look at it.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we're gonna table that until the census data is available. And should this commission move forward after the November 3rd ballot, that'll be something that we'll look at.
Well, I mean, you don't have to wait for the census data to say whether you want four wards or three wards or two wards even or whatever. You know, I mean, but the redrawing of the lines is
that's what would have to wait, right?
That part of it. But how many wards, you know, that's something separate. But again, even if we're going to draw the four wards, it wouldn't be till the next election. And if it passed in November, there would be time to do that because you'd have fresh numbers. So those numbers would be good for the following 10 years.
Is that something that we want to discuss moving forward then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay, so then. Okay, Mark, I see that you made your notes in the commission action column.
And I just want to be clear because I used the words that you used here, and Gina had pointed out early on. It's not. I forget the first ones we did here, but, you know, to move forward or no action, say, on the vehicle. It just means no action by the Charter Revision Commission. It's not no action because it might take place someplace else. Like, I'm just saying because that it just, but just for the record, so the record is clear.
Okay.
When we're talking about action or it's just as it relates to this commission in this go around.
Right.
For people who are new, for those of you who have been around, it might be a little bit overkill, but for the people who are new, I just want to make sure that there's transparency of the explanation, because sometimes for those who have been involved and have like knowledge outside of this commission based on their experience, I just think it's important for people to understand that it's not just like being brushed aside, but
right.
I agree with Attorney Marino's point. I mean, really, in a charter, less is more, because it's the overriding document and the details. That's why you have elected officials to flush out the details, because they change over time and they evolve, and there might be a need, you know, to make adjustments based on that. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to make sure that for the record. So if somebody's looking at these documents to say no action, or it just means no action as it relates only to this commission in this go around where you have acknowledged a time restraint. And, you know, once your final report is accepted, it seems as though you've all said it. And I believe the Board of Aldermen understands that it would, the idea would be to reappoint you and start the process again so that you can then take up these things that might take more time. And really, you know, you need more time to absorb all of this stuff and get the proper information so you can make an informed decision.
So I just have one quick question, and I apologize that I came in later because of another commitment, another meeting, but on section 16, where it says agree to consider minimum qualifications for certain appointed positions, is the intent there that we're going to say what positions there are, or is that a freestanding loose statement? Because then who would it be up to determine whether minimum qualifications were to be put in place, or are they being recommended?
Yeah, we
required.
We were discussing making the minimum qualifications for full-time appointed positions. For example, we use the finance director again. We would have minimum requirements because he's a full-time appointed position. So we're not necessarily talking about elected. So the city treasurer would not fall under that because he's an elected position. But the finance director, we wouldn't come up with the qualifications required. That would be another board or another commission's job to come up with the qualifications. We're just suggesting that there are minimum qualifications for those positions. And again, they would be appointed, full-time appointed positions.
And what we could do for the next meeting is the things that you're going to discuss, we can get, I'll resend the charter provisions that are already in place, because like I said, there's already minimum requirements for the finance director in the charter. So you, if you like them, you keep them. And if there's other positions that you want to address, then you could address those and codify it that way. Okay. But at least we'll have, you'll have all the stuff so we can kind of narrow it down.
Right.
Sure. I just want to make sure we're going to, that's saying we're going to enumerate which particular positions we're going to set requirements for.
Yeah, that would be the full-time appointed positions.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. You know, as I mentioned earlier, our next meeting is not scheduled until Wednesday, July 8th at 6 p.m. So, you know, we went through the items today and we really didn't eliminate very many. So what I'm going to ask that we do is review. Mark, are you going to, can you send that out with your notes on it to the commission?
Send it out immediately and it'll be posted to the website.
All right, perfect. Good. So if you can take a look at those between now and our next meeting, and you know, we're really going to have to start looking at which ones that are we going to move forward with and give to the Board of Aldermen for approval or not. So if you can look at those and kind of prioritize those items and see what your appetite is for each of those, if you want to just rank them one through however number there are. I think we started out with 16 or so. If you want to just number them one through whatever, so we can have that discussion next week, and then maybe the next two meetings or so, we can narrow it down to the ones that we want to move forward with. So again, our next meeting is Wednesday, July 8th. And if we could just, again, just do our homework on those and come with a clearer picture of what we want to move forward with.
So a question, Rob.
Yep.
Do you think that, I mean, given that we are taking an extra week between each of the meetings, do you think it would be appropriate for subcommittees to consider some of those points, like we're doing with the one that was the police chief's position, just to get greater movement as opposed to having the fullest discussion at each of the meetings?
Sure. You know, obviously the police succession is the big one that we need the subcommittee for. What other item are you like referencing?
I don't have a particular one in mind, but you were talking about narrowing it down because of the time. And I think that subcommittees are probably one of the ways that would allow us to make hay on some of the items that we're discussing based on people's interest in moving those items forward. Every item, of course, is important to someone.
Sure.
And whatever we leave behind is going to be. So everyone should, I think, have the chance. And again, I don't suppose to be the chair, just a thought that came to my mind, that those that feel passionate about an issue could join and do a subcommittee and do some of the work for the full committee, so the full committee can get down to the brass tacks as opposed to using the whole time to discuss as we did today with deputies.
Sure. Okay. Is there any anyone on the commission that has an item that they would like to discuss further prior to our next meeting on July 8th? If there's something that they want to look at a little deeper, that we can certainly form another subcommittee.
Mr. Chair, if I may suggest, if I beg your I'm sorry to interrupt, but as it relates to when you have a subcommittee of more than one person, you then are subject to FOI, which means if those two want, you know, more than one person, whatever the subcommittee is, that is a public entity. So that requires a meeting notice and posting and
right.
So forth. Perhaps one way that might be effective to achieve everybody's collective goal here if, you know, if you had, if there was a particular issue that you wanted to assign to one member to assemble the information to narrow down, one member would not require a subcommittee in the FOI sense where you would have to notice a meeting, because if there were two people in the subcommittee for FOI, they wouldn't be able to really, they shouldn't be speaking to each other privately.
Right.
They should be having like a meeting. So that might, you know, that's.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. Issue. Yeah, that makes sense. But obviously for the discussion on the police, that's gonna have to be posted because there's more than one committee member. So yeah, that's a great idea. That's a great point. So if we each take maybe one or two items to discuss further at the next meeting.
And then if they need the help of Attorney Marino or staff or, you know, whoever, then we can work with that person to get the information that you need.
Right. Okay.
In the committee for the police, Mr. Black Backlick also has his hand up too, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
So that might be a way to achieve what you're trying to do, even if the committee for the police department was, if you have two people, so be it. But
suggestion, just I think, and put this thing to bed. I know that earlier was discussed that Attorney Marino would get into an email chain with Mr. Malerba, Mr. LaRocque, and Mr. McCluster and talk about the formation of a subcommittee, that he would help summon the police chief to have that joint conversation. To your point, Mr. Chairman, I think that would be a publicly noticed meeting, and I think we can easily make that happen in advance of your next meeting. So I think with Attorney Marino and the three individuals mentioned, I think it would be no problem to get Chief Narowski, and if it's necessary, a representative from the union to discuss some of the succession issues and in the moving up from within the bargaining unit to the two positions that are not in the bargaining unit, if it's necessary at that point. I think it's probably not necessary because the chief is more than familiar with the collective bargaining agreement and we'll be able to opine as to what the practices have been. So that's my suggestion, that Attorney Marino can kind of get with those three gentlemen who volunteered earlier to get a subcommittee of about that controversial, very in-depth issue and have a subcommittee meeting regarding that.
Okay, perfect, yeah. All right, so if that's gonna be the only subcommittee that's gonna be required to meet and post an agenda, we can each take an item or two to research on our own and report back at our next meeting. The mayor being a full-time position and being salary commensurate with full-time, and also electing elected officials to 4 years instead of two. Does anyone want to in particular tackle that? I can do that. I'll take care of that. Those items then. Notices to the public should be posted electronically. Anyone want to look at that a little bit more in depth?
Yeah, I'll take it for you.
All right. Thanks, Arnie.
Yep.
We talked, I don't know if we need to look in depth at the donation to the hospital and the library and other charitable organizations. So and we move down to the police department. We already have that subcommittee. How about combining the tax board as a subcommittee of the Board of Aldermen? Does anyone want to review that? Camille, you had mentioned, is that something you want to look at a little more in depth? I see you nodding.
Yes, it looks like.
Okay. All right, so Camille, I'm going to put you on that.
Okay.
And then raising the standard of qualifications for city positions. Does anyone want to look into that a little deeper to see what other municipalities are doing or what they're not doing?
You can put me on that, Rob, if you want.
Okay, thanks, Chuck. Okay, and then reviewing, having, I don't know if this needs anyone to look into, but just more of an opinion whether we should move forward with having the police commission be elected rather than appointed by the mayor. So we'll talk about that. So I think that covers everything. Is there anyone noticed anything that I may have missed? Okay, so looking at the at number seven on the agenda, the schedule and timeline. So if we can do our research on those particular items that we just reviewed, and the subcommittee can meet with about the police department or about the succession of the chief prior to our July 8th meeting, I think we can start narrowing things down a little bit more. So does anyone have any questions or any further discussion before we adjourn?
As a process question, when can we go back to meeting in person, right? Connecticut statute say what, 25 people or 100 people outdoors or something? Does that give us the opportunity to go to meet City Hall?
Yeah, Vin, has there been meetings at City Hall? Is that something we can look at?
No, there have not.
There have not. Okay, so the city hasn't opened up the building yet. Okay.
Why don't we say, Drew, is there any plans to open soon? Or why don't we say if it does open in time, we can't meet. If not, we can have a Zoom.
So with this small of a group, you most likely could make it happen for your July 8th meeting based on the guidelines. But I think you'd have to take a straw poll of the board to see who's really comfortable with that. I know a lot of people still are not in my experience. So we would certainly accommodate you and be able to make that happen if it's the pleasure of the board. I just don't know how Mr. Garfalo might have an opinion on this too.
He does, because there's not really a plan to sanitize and keep everybody safe.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's how we've kept it for our staff's sake too, is to kind of keep people out of the building until we have certain protocols in place as it relates to, you know, regular public access, which is not to say that you all are not, essentially given this charge as a board. But to his point, to Mark's point, it is probably cleaner to continue at this pace and with this format for now, I would say, until we have a chance to further kind of put some protocols in place for public meetings in the building.
Perfect. Okay.
Yeah, because there is no protocol. So I would agree with that until there's a protocol and a process to keep the public safe and the members of the commission safe and the staff safe.
As much as I'd love to see all you guys in person.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so we'll continue to meet via Zoom. All right, so it is kind of 8:03. Can I have unless there's anyone else that has anything to discuss, a motion to adjourn at 8:03?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion by Chris LaRoe.
And second.
Second by Gina McKay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, everyone.